will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So, Ty, it's all yours.
Hi, everybody. My name's Todd Beckus, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm extremely nervous. I don't know. I'm just extremely nervous tonight. I think, as I've done the last couple weeks, I'm going to say it again tonight. This is step three as I understand it. This is my experience with step three. I'm not saying that everybody's going to do it like this. This is as I understand it. This is how I'm going to present it. Oftentimes, I have a really hard time at times to put into words step three. I know sometimes I go to a meeting and the topic of step three will come up, and I often have a hard time trying to get across what I want to say. I did a little research. I always research just because I like to know, have a good idea what I'm talking about when I'm up here, first off. When you talk about step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood it. It's important to understand will. There's only two wills. There's human will. And then there's the will of God. What is human will? The human will is made up of three basic instincts. We have the social instinct, that companionship, our drive for companionship, our drive for prestige, our drive for pride. And then by themselves, there's nothing the matter with them. That's important for you to understand, is there's nothing the matter with those things. There's nothing the matter with having drives. If we didn't drive for companionship, we'd be earnest. If we didn't have any pride in ourselves, we'd let ourselves go. It's good to take pride in yourself and your appearance and how you, those kind of, that's what they're alluding to. You have the security, the material. Security, emotional security, your ambitions. And those by themselves, there's nothing to matter with them by themselves. And then there's the sex instinct. There's acceptable sexual behavior, and there's unacceptable sexual. I'm not here to talk about anything. I'm not here to lecture on those things, just so you have an understanding. And then we talk about the human will, and we talk about self-will run right. You can see where I'm going with that. It's very easy to see where an alcoholic with self-will and applying these instincts where you kind of get out of control. I mean, I'm sitting there and I'll tell you what's going through my head right now. You'd be scared if you could hear what's going through my head or see what's going through my head when we talk about the will. And I'll tell you, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was surrounded with so many good old-timers who said so many good things. And I took them to heart. I didn't necessarily listen to them right away, but I took them to heart. And one of the old timers who's still in my life today, really close friend, talked about making decisions. He said, when you would come out, and I related to it, because when I was out there drinking, I couldn't make a decision. So he talked about, when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous, we learn to make decisions. It's simple, right? It wasn't, though. It really wasn't simple. Self-will has to be strong, dry, because life is based on it. And as we just kind of talked about, my life as a human being is driven by these instincts. I have these instincts to be social, to material security, to have a job. If I didn't have that, it wouldn't work. And sexual drive, that's how we populate our planet. So those are by themselves, there's nothing to matter. But the self-will has to be strong, dry, because life is based on it. God made this powerful force. And the same force that makes it possible for us to succeed as individuals and as societies also is the reason, when it is defective, that people are in prisons. You think about that. You think about people that are going to jail. And not necessarily prisons, but I'll add that people get into trouble. And I'll look at my own self, and I'll look at some of my instincts, some of my drives when I was out there drinking. I promise you, alcohol just manifested it. Maybe more. Especially the sexual. You know, the morals of a tomcat. When I was, you add alcohol, and I'll tell you what, it just went out the door. But I also tell you, too, a good buddy of mine, he's gone now, but Tom Hooks, he talked about, and I really, really, he said, Tom, when you go to the bar and your primary purpose is to get drunk, you know that you have a problem. You know you belong here. You know what? I related to that. I really, truly related to that, because a lot of those things kind of got knocked down, and alcohol and getting drunk became the most important thing. And when you look at step three in the big book, one sentence, one paragraph that jumps out, and I know we refer to it, I hear it a lot, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Can you relate to that? And you're like, God, can you relate? I'm sitting there, and especially with the self-pity. How many times did I sit there, waking up on a hangover morning? If I just had this, if I just had that. When you start out a sentence, if I just, you're wallowing in self-pity. And I promise you, I wallowed a lot in self-pity. Feeling sorry for myself because I didn't have this and I didn't have that. If I had this, it would be better. If I had that, it would be better. So I really took that sentence to heart. That paragraph really resonates in me. It talked about my life when I was drinking. I stepped on my fellow's toes. I did things that I wouldn't normally do. I piss people off. That's what I do when I drink. That's what happens when I drink. I wasn't a nice person when I drank. I had times where I was nice, but as I got into my alcoholism, as I got sicker and sicker, my social instincts really kind of went out the window, and I really was miserable, and I didn't want people around me. The big book also goes on, so our troubles we think are basically our making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. There you have those instincts we talked about earlier. And then it tells us, it's in the big book, that I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot, although they usually don't think so. And it just goes on. That's where I talk, pointing the finger at everybody else. We talked about last week, I'm going to bring it up again, so I still chuckle at it. We don't talk about it. I never brought it up to my dad at home. But one night after tequila, I woke up, and I'm pissing down the steps. And somehow, I blame my dad for that. I mean, can you imagine it? Can you imagine your kid waking him up and then have him turn around and blame you for that? I mean, it boggles my mind, but that's where my head was at, ladies and gentlemen. That's where my head was at. That's the kind of things that I did when I was drinking. Or how about, I'm in this major car accident, and it was pretty horrific. I'm not going to go into detail, but it was pretty horrific. That was in March of 1986. Now I'm going to jump ahead to right around June or July. I don't remember when. I come home, and I wasn't driving, so it was okay, right? It was okay. I'm rationalizing this stuff. I'm justifying it in my head. It was okay. I'm trying to get the key in the door, and I was so drunk, I couldn't get the key in the door. My dad was there to open it up. Can you imagine, after all the things that go along with an accident like that, where there was a death involved, and have your son come home? That's the kind of things. The self will run riot. I certainly relate when the big book talks about self will run riot. Although, when I walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, everybody was just picking on me. That's where my head was at. But those are the kind of things that I was doing. Those are the kind of things. It wasn't uncommon for me to do things like that. It wasn't uncommon for me to blame you for something that I did. Big Book also talks about, it says, the first requirement that is we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. That took a while. That took a while. Just like all the other steps. Step one and step two, it truly took me a while to get to the point where I felt that I took the step. It took a while. So when we talk tonight, we're going to be here for another, half hour or so. But please, we've got to keep in mind, keep in mind that it took a while to get through this step. The first two steps were really, they were more, in my opinion, they're more of a reflection, looking back and reminding myself and looking at myself and trying to apply those principles, but not really a lot of action. I really truly believe that it was this step three that's where the action really, the action that really started, where I'm actually taking action and doing something. That's just my opinion. That's just strictly my opinion. If you don't believe it, that's okay. That's just my opinion. and we talk about decisions. And making decisions is simply gathering facts and determining a course of action based on interpretation of those facts as we perceive them. I had a hard time doing that. I really had a hard time doing that. I couldn't see my life for what it was. I couldn't see really my life for what it was. When I came in, everybody was picking on me. So it took a while for me to finally see what was going on, that my life really was a wreck. And we talked a little bit about it last week. How did I come to an understanding? First thing I had to do was to make a decision to forget everything I thought I knew, because I was very confused. I confused religion with the third step. I really brought a lot of religion. I was really kind of confused with religion in step three. I remember having a thought that if I really took step three, the thought of ashes and sackcloth was in my head, and walking around with beads in my arm. I really, truly thought that. And I don't think I'm alone. I don't think I'm alone in that thinking. I think that kind of goes along. It's important to remember that now I have religion in my life, but I don't bring it to AA any more than I bring AA to my religion. The two are separate as far as I'm concerned. So when I made a decision to seek a God of my understanding, I had to forget everything I thought I knew, because it was really goofing me up. I look back now, it was really goofing me up. And it was hard. It was really hard to make that decision, because I thought God was going to get me for that. I really did. I thought he was going to punish me for that, but it was a good decision. So we talk a little bit about decisions here, of making a decision. I truly did make that decision and put aside what I thought I knew about God, and I sought you to help me seek this God of my understanding, to find a God of my understanding. And how did that start? Well, I first started to see AA work when I was at the family reunion and I realized I lost a compulsion to drink. That was huge. That was absolutely huge. So we talk about faith in here. And what was happening, those little things that were starting to happen in my life were starting to build my faith. You see what I'm saying? I'm taking suggestions from the members of Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm applying them to my life. And my faith is starting to grow a little bit. And that first one, you get on your knees and ask a God in understanding for help, whether you believe or not. And before you go to bed, say thank you. I didn't know that I really believed at that time, but you know what? Because you suggested that I do it, I followed through. And that's the things I started to do. What's an example of faith? What is faith? What is faith? When I walked in tonight, I had faith that we're going to have a meeting. But before I came here, I had faith that when I pressed the button on my truck, it was going to start. When I set an alarm clock, I had faith that when it's going to go off at a certain time and wake me up in the morning. That's an example of faith. When I walk in a room and I turn on the light switch, I have faith that you don't even think about it. Just I know it's going to go on. The lights are going to go on. That's what I'm talking about, that kind of faith. So when I was asked to start taking some of these suggestions, when the suggestions were made and I made the decision to start taking them, that's the kind of faith I started to develop. It didn't happen overnight. But as I started to get positive results, my faith was starting to build. I started to build up faith in the program. Step 12, or step 3, asks us to make a decision to turn our wills and our lives over to the care of God. What do they mean by that? I don't think you turn anything over in step 3. I think you start practicing, because I really don't know what it is yet. I don't know what it is. But when I read in the literature, as I look at it, as I try to internalize it, as I try to understand it, the conclusion that I got is that the decision that I make in step 3 is to move on and work the rest of the steps. That's where I find out about it. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. Step 3 is we made a decision to turn our wills and our lives over to the care of God. That doesn't mean I do anything as far as How do I? That's where I have a hard time explaining. I'm making the decision to turn my will and my life over. Let God direct me. Let Him be my director. Let Him guide me. Whereas in the past, I would get an idea in my head and I would carry out on it. Then you add alcohol on top of that and you can see what was happening. I love this sentence, this paragraph in the 12 and 12. It says, when we try to make our will conform with God's, that we begin to use it rightly. And that's kind of what was happening. To all of us, this was a most wonderful revelation. Out of our whole trouble had been the misuse of willpower. And I think about that. And I think back and I look back over my life. You know when I called on God? When I was in trouble. After that car accident, I promise you, I was at the front row of church and asking God, you know, get me out of this and I'll never do it again. But I meant it. To say that sounds so cliche right now, it sounds so, but I really, truly meant it. I was in trouble. I was scared. And when I called upon God at that particular time, I really and truly meant it. But I didn't understand what the problem was. I didn't understand that how alcohol affected me. I didn't understand the manifestation of an allergy and the addiction. I didn't understand any of that. So although God did work in my life, and I didn't get out of the trouble, but we got through the trouble. The thing that got me into trouble to begin with, I didn't know. I didn't equate it to alcohol. I equated it to bad luck. I equated it to this. I equated it to a lot of things. I can never look at myself. So now they're telling me to try to make my will conform with God's. And I truly believe that God doesn't want me to drink. I mean, bad things happen when I drink. I'm not a nice person when I drink. So now I'm trying to seek this God of my understanding and have Him direct my life. That's what I'm doing with step three. Our whole trouble has been the misuse of willpower. We have been tried to bombard our problems with it instead of attempting to bring it in agreement with God's intention for us. That's such a simple statement, but it's so powerful. That's my life right there. All my life, up until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was trying to tell God what to do. That's what that statement says to me. And when I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, what I'm trying to do is bring it into conformity with His will, for Him to be my director, for Him to be my guide. And when I do that, I don't do it perfectly. And I still have instincts I got to deal with, but I make better decisions. Sometimes, I remember early on, and I'm practicing this, I'm following through with the prayer that they suggest in the big book. And I'll be sitting there. And all of a sudden, I'll get this thought in my head about a meeting that maybe I should go to. And I'll go to the meeting, and there'll be somebody that asks for my number and end up sponsoring. Or maybe I'll go, and I'll end up being asked to lead somewhere. Making the decision to turn my will and my life over the care of God as I understand them doesn't make me perfect. It doesn't mean I'm not going to make mistakes. It doesn't mean I'm not going to make some bad decisions. It just means I'm trying to discern what God's will is for me and trying to carry it out. And I really truly believe that it is this step where I make the decision to move on to the rest of the steps. I remember early on, my sponsor, I love him dearly, I think about him a lot, is Jim Nelson. What Jim had taught me to do was to make God and AA the most important thing in your life, and everything else will just fall into place. And because I'm starting to build up a little bit of faith, and I'm starting to take suggestions, I really truly believe that, and I started to do that very thing. And one time in particular, I don't know about you, maybe you can relate, maybe you can't relate, I was in a lot of money trouble when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd racked up a credit card, a couple credit cards. That was a lot of money trouble. So I'm on this really strict budget. Real strict budget. And I'm making ends meet. Ends are getting meat. You know, I give myself a raise when I came to AA when I'm not drinking. I did have a little bit of money, but I had to really watch. I didn't have a lot of extra. And this is back before, I was trying to pay off my credit cards. So I allowed myself X amount of dollars in a week. And I remember this one particular week, I didn't have any extra cash left over, and I still needed gas. And you know, one of the pride is one of my character defects is I have a lot of pride. I'm just being honest. And I was too proud to ask anybody for any money to get through the week. But at this particular time, a gentleman came into my life who we're still good friends today. He would call me every day, and I'd go pick him up for a meeting. And I'd always get home, and on my answer machine, he'd leave a message, "Hey, Todd, this is Tom, just calling to say, hey, and see what meeting we're going to tonight." So I got home, and sure enough, there's Tom on the phone, on this answer machine. And my tank is, it's like an eighth of a tank. I don't have a lot of gas, but you said, make AA the most important thing, everything else will fall into place, right? So I never mentioned to Tom. I went down, I called him, went down, picked him up, we went to the meeting. And on the way home from the meeting, he handed me a $10 bill. He said, "This is for all the times that you picked me up." I didn't ask him for anything. I didn't expect anything. I just did it. And that's back when gas was less than a dollar and a gallon. I had gas for the week. So you see where I'm going with that. I'm making this decision. And those are the kind of things that are happening to me. You know, at some point, making this decision, you know, people are starting to come back in my life. My family never left me, but they really, truly didn't want me around. So I'm starting to get my crap together. Things they're going decent. Things are going decent. And my sister asked me to be a godfather for her daughter. That's the kind of things that are starting to happen. My job, where I worked at, who I really, the last couple of months of my drinking, really, I was not a good employee. But they're watching the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what's happening. I don't even realize what's happening. I'm seeking to try to do God's will. I'm going to meetings. I'm doing my best to do what I can do. You know, I couldn't do a lot, but I could clean up after meetings. I could pray. I'm learning to pray. I'm seeking God's will. And I don't know. One of the things that I got into trouble is late a lot. When I was there, I wasn't there mentally. I was there physically. It smelled like a brewery. And I was on my last leg. One more time you're late, you're fired. And I came to AA, got sober, and I'm starting to work the steps, the first three, starting to apply into my life. And you know, wouldn't you know it, one morning I forgot to set my alarm, and I woke up to the sound of my phone ringing. It was my boss calling. He says, "You're going to join us today." They're seeing the change. I didn't get fired. They're seeing the change in me. Those are the kind of things that are happening when I'm making this decision. I still get up in the morning. I remind myself that I'm powerless over alcohol, that my life is unmanageable. I come to believe in a power greater than myself, you could restore me to sanity. And then I make that decision to turn my will and my life over to God's care. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story. I have a lot of little stories, but this just happened real recent. Tell you a couple stories. I told you about this ready-made family that I got involved with. It came with a little daughter who we struggled with. We butted heads. We really butted heads. But I sought you out, trying to do God's will, really trying to do the right thing. I sought out a buddy of mine who went through a similar situation. And took the suggestions and watched this little girl grow up to be a beautiful young woman. And I just did what you taught me. And I don't know if I mentioned this or not. I'm going to mention it again because it's worth repeating. I co-signed for a car for her. A car loan. And she got to the point where she was going to buy her own car. which I had to sign off on the loan that she had, but she didn't quite pay it off. So I go down to the dealership, and there's this paper I got to sign, and it had my name on there. What's the relationship? It said father. And it just blew me away. That doesn't mean anything to you. Probably doesn't mean a darn thing to you. But if you see the trials and tribulations, the turmoil that we went through growing up, that was huge. It didn't say stepfather, it said father. It really blew me away. I went out and shed a few tears in my truck. And then a couple weeks ago, my wife and I, we went to the Harvest of Hope. We had plans in the following week to go to Benazet. We're going to go to camp and then take my daughter and her fiance to Benazet to see the elk. We had every intention of doing that. Well, Carly's new job wasn't able to do that. She had to work that Saturday. So we went to Harvest Hope and went there to enjoy a good day. I was to host one of the speakers, a gentleman from Pittsburgh, and we really hit it off. Really a good guy. We got talking about Cook's Forest. And I said, yeah, I went there 20 years in a row. We're going on, we're talking. And I said, I've never been to the conference, though. As many times I've been down there, I've never been to the conference. Do you want to go? Now, my wife and I, absolutely positive, we love Cook's Forest. Any opportunity we can to go down, we do. And I said, let me text my wife and see what she says. So I texted her, and I get this one-word sentence back, one word, sure. So we ended up going to Cook's Forest for the conference. It just worked out. So everybody loves God's will until it happens. Doesn't mean that it's comfortable. Doesn't mean that you're not going to experience it. It doesn't mean it's not going to be painful. But if you can see it through to the end, as far as I'm concerned, it's been my experience, it's always the best way. Always, always the best way. And I'm looking at the clock. And I think that's enough for step three. Thank you for listening. God bless you.
Thanks, Todd. Now we've got some time for questions and answers.
Well, guess what we don't have. Mm-hmm.
You're here in the room. Go ahead and raise your hand. Oh, that'll do it. So if you're here in the room, go ahead and raise your hand, get to the microphone. If you're on Zoom and you have a question, feel free to unmute yourself and just speak up when you have a moment. So who would like to get us started?
Todd, thank you so much. That was great. I just have a question. You said you don't bring religion to the rooms, and you don't take AA to religion. I don't understand that, because doesn't AA give you a better idea of a more personal idea of God, which surely informs your religious practice, or are they totally separate?
That's a really good question. That's a really good question, because I think it's something that it's confused. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't want God to be the answer, okay? And my religious life up to that point was really skewed. And it wasn't because of what I was taught. It's because of this thing up here. The way I perceived things. My perception that God was a very punishing God, he was out to get me. And so when it came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I brought that. And then when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no faith whatsoever that God was going to perform this miracle. Okay? And through a lot of work in the steps, I came to a God of my understanding. And I really truly believe that God brought me to AA and then AA brought me back to God. Okay. I think one of the most beautiful things in Alcoholics Anonymous, which makes it all inclusive for everybody, is the fact that it's a God of your understanding. So I went back to my religion, I went back to Catholicism. And I really loved being Catholic. I love the Catholic Church. I love everything about it. But when I'm in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, especially with newcomers, the last thing I really truly believe that a newcomer wants to hear is for me to go on about my Catholicism and what I believe. I serve people in Alcoholics Anonymous better by talking about my experience, my strength, and my hope as it pertains to alcoholism, not my religion. Okay? And so when I go to church, although I will say that our church, I'm not anonymous. When somebody has an alcohol problem, the priest calls me. But when I'm at church, I love the Mass. And it's not important that everybody knows that I'm an alcoholic. I'm not there as an alcoholic. I'm there to worship the God of my understanding. So it's not important that I bring up my AA at church. That's where I keep them separate. But it doesn't mean that I don't benefit. I think I'm a better Catholic because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think I'm a better AA because of my Catholicism. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Okay. Thanks. Good question.
Who else has a question for Todd?
Hi, I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
and Todd, thank you so much. Love your take on step three. So you talk about prior to being really making a decision, that you were looking at different things that other people were doing in the program, and it was increasing your faith that perhaps this might be the way to go. It's kind of what I gathered from what you were saying, that it wasn't that you just white-knuckled it, and I'm just deciding that I am going to turn my will and my life over to God. That you, it's, I think you were saying, that's why I'm, I guess this is a question, how long did it take you to get to the point where you had enough faith to make a decision to turn your will and life over to the care of God? The way you describe it, it seemed to me that it wasn't like your sponsor told you to do it, so you said that, that you tried to do it right away. It had to be proven to you. Would that be? Am I reading that wrong?
No, I believe I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
First, let me say that it's hard to put into words that first 7 or 8 months of my sobriety. And what I was trying to get across was I came in here thinking that I didn't have a problem.
Right.
So
many of us. Yeah.
Looked at step one and I realized the problem and the solution. And step two, where I'm coming to believe, I believe at step two where I'm gaining a little bit of faith. And I started to see the insanity in my life. And through that little bit of faith that I've received in step two,
okay,
that carried over into step three. One builds up on the other.
Yeah.
You know, they're all
right.
In past tense. So this little bit of faith, and what I was alluding to was the good old timers, my sponsor, people I'm around, the different meetings I'm going to, I'm hearing things like, never heard of a grateful alcoholic getting drunk. Get on your knees in the morning, ask God of your understanding for help. Before you go to bed, say thank you. You know, go to meetings. All these suggestions. Mm-hmm. But the difference when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous this time is I'm taking the suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm taking the suggestions, my life is getting better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was hard to get on my knees. At first I didn't say, oh, okay, I'm going to get on my knees. It didn't start out that way.
Mm-hmm.
I started out on my back.
Mm-hmm.
But then somebody suggested put my cigarettes under the bed. I love to smoke. First thing I did when I woke up is I lit a cigarette. That's all I was doing. As long as I'm down there, on my knees to grab them, I said, hey, God help me. That's how it started. It just started out slow. So this short period of time that we have here to talk was actually several months in the making. And the one that really, the turning point in my life was when my buddy handed me that $10 bill. When I really, truly understood that there was something to this. Up to this point, there was a lot of little things that were happening that were building my faith. And it just reaffirmed when he handed a $10 bill, and I didn't let anybody know. Nobody, not a person, knew that I needed money. Nobody. He knew, and he provided. And that's been my experience. That's why I say, everybody loves God's will until it happens. And it's not always pleasant. I've been through some, just like everybody here, some of the stories that you have in the room, some of the things you've been through are very unpleasant. But when you stick to the God of your understanding and have faith and ask for God's will, you get through it. I've watched the people go through some really difficult things when they come out at the end. It was in a way that I couldn't have imagined. So it was that, I'd say that turning point was when Tom handed me that $10 bill. He had no clue. No clue.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Todd, thank you.
I'll get you next.
I really struggled from day one with making that decision because I thought, once I make that decision, I can't do anything wrong ever again. That's what I thought. And so each day I did something wrong, I'm like, crap, I've got to start over. So I try to do it every day. But I'm struggling with an issue, maybe you could pinpoint a little. Our church choir just started back up because of COVID, and I also have the key to a meeting on Sundays that most people aren't open on Sundays, and I open up most Sundays. And I'm really struggling between what God wants me to do to keep that meeting open or to go to church. Is it possible that I'm thinking maybe my ego's too big that I need to open the church up? I mean, I'm really struggling with what God wants. And do you ever run into those problems?
You know, that's a good question. And I think maybe I should look at my motives. If it was me, I'd look at my motives. And I would discuss it with my sponsor. I'd try to discover what my motives are. That's it. With just the information you gave me, that would be the answer I would have. Is I would discuss it with my sponsor. And check my motives.
She's a nun, remember?
Well, and you trust her, right? You trust her. She's also an alcoholic.
Yes.
She won't lead you wrong.
Okay.
Helen, you had your hand up.
Todd, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. Believe it or not, my question was exactly what you just answered. Was, especially early on when we're trying to figure out what God's will is and we're faced with two good alternatives, what do we do? And you've already answered it, so,
yeah.
You know, because it doesn't seem to be, does it seem to be as hard now to figure out what to do? Follow God's will with good alternatives.
I think I need to be more careful now because sometimes I think I know better. So I need to watch my motives as well. I need to watch my motives, just like I did early on. Anything that I talk about today, I still do. I still get on my knees and ask God, am I understanding for help? I still run things by my sponsor when I'm in a dilemma. If I don't know what to do, I still run things by my sponsor. I, in my head, I got to watch my ego because just because you have X amount of years doesn't mean you know everything, and I need to remember that. So I do run things by my sponsor just because it keeps me honest, it keeps me on track. But at the same time, I will tell you that sometimes I have to go back and apologize because the decision I made wasn't a very good one. Thanks, Helen.
Anyone else have a question?
Let me off early tonight.
No.
Oh, no.
Can't, oh, yeah. I have to give at least one warning here.
thanks again, Todd, for coming out. It's just great listening to you, and thanks for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. When you're working with somebody and you come to the third step and it says, you know, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I don't understand. Number one, when am I going to start getting some of these benefits? You know, I mean, I already did the first two steps. Now the third one is like, you know, he's supposed to be taking care of me. Do I give him a direct deposit slip? What's the deal here? I need proof. I'm empirical. I need to see this. How do you deal with somebody like that?
I fire him, damn it. No, it's... You know what? When I sponsor somebody, I don't necessarily sponsor to help them. And I don't mean that I don't care. One of my favorite things with newcomers, with people that I sponsor, is to sit down, go over the book. I mean, we go face to face. Gut level AA, one-on-one AA. I absolutely love that. And when I'm sitting there and I'm sharing with somebody, we're going over the step, we'll go through the big book, and then we'll go through the steps we took and whatever else, and we'll read a paragraph back and forth. And as we're doing that, I'm able to share my experience, strength, and hope. We don't just read and say nothing. It's very involved. It's very, a lot of dialogue goes on. It's wonderful. It's really wonderful to sit there and do that with somebody. And some of those various stories that I shared with you are the various same stories I'm able to share with them. I don't guarantee them everything. I often point out that everybody loves God's will until it happens. Everybody loves God's will until it happens. It doesn't mean you're going to have two cars in the garage, a picket fence. It's not hunky-dory anonymous. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. Life on life's terms. Really. It wasn't easy. The first year of sobriety, it wasn't easy. And I often point out to a newcomer that, hey, you got yourself in this jam. One day at a time, we're going to slowly get you out of it. You never have to feel this way again. You need to get better yourself before your surroundings change. Try to really emphasize that.
Okay, that's it. Right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
You bet. All
right. Any other questions?
Anybody else?
All
good.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you so much.